No one holds command over me. No man, no god, no prince. What is a claim of age for ones who are immortal? What is a claim of power for ones who defy death? Call your damnable hunt. We shall see who I drag along to listen to this show, part of the Goblin Broadcast Network at gbncom.com.
Gamers Haven Podcast, a gaming podcast for game masters of all gaming systems. So grab your dice bags and we'll get your game on.
But hello out there in internet land. Welcome back to Gamers Haven Podcast. I'm lighting a fire. I found a fireplace in this place. It's kind of cool.
But we have thermal heating. Why bother with a fireplace?
Because it's more homey.
Because it's cozy.
Smurf.
Cozy and homey.
This is an underground base of operations for world domination. And
we don't talk about the world domination.
Cozy?
Yeah.
We're not supposed to talk about the world domination part.
Well, we're not actually going to do anything with the world domination part. I mean, that system's been disabled.
No, it hasn't.
Yes, it has.
Jeremy
took away the transistors.
Jeremy keeps activating it again.
I'm rebuilding it.
Well, he can rebuild it, but the problem is that the parts he needs, I'm the only one that has them, so...
True. Well, he can go to Radio Shack, you know.
Radio Shack sells them all.
Not all of them. There's one piece.
I'll just create it in my magical lab.
Good luck.
Yes.
So, today we're actually going to be talking about
world creation.
We're going to start our world creation stuff in tune with Nano Primo.
Nano Primo?
Yes, it's started over by the Harping Monkey, the National World Creation Month.
Oh, Nano Primo. Okay.
Yes, not NaNoWriMo.
What's NaNoWriMo?
National Novel Writing Month.
Oh. I didn't know about that one either. Well, hell, I learned two new things today.
What would be National
I'm ahead
donut,
of the curve.
Donut Month?
National Donut Month?
Yeah.
I don't know. Every month should be National Donut Month.
N-O-D-Demo? Or N-O-No-Domo. No Domo.
No Domo?
No Domo.
No Domo?
No Domo.
Nano Domo?
Nano Domo.
No Domo Nut?
Nano Domo. There we go. That's just wrong in so many ways.
Yeah, I know.
They're just Mansquito's babies. It doesn't matter.
That's true. I didn't know Mansquito was a woman.
He's not. He's a Mansquito.
It's an asexual Mansquito, so it's a thing-squito.
Thing-squito. But he goes by Mansquito.
It's a nasty Squito.
What was his name again?
Huh?
What was Mansquito's name?
Paul.
Paul.
Nathan named him Paul. Is that in connection to Paul of... y'all radio in honor of him?
No.
No?
I would not name him after such a detrimental creature. No, I have someone I work with at work whose name's Paul, and he's an...
Smurf.
It fits perfectly with Mansquito.
Wow.
Paul, if you're listening...
You're...
Smurf.
So you know what? I already told it to you.
I'm sorry.
Well, you know, it's... I'll be editing in Smurf there anyway, so...
Well, he is a Smurf, too.
Well, remember, the Smurfs have a whole language, and so Smurf can be taken so many ways.
That's true. The Smurf language is very, very interesting.
You can take from my angry attitude or angry inflections of the voice that I mean bad things with my Smurfs.
Maybe it's based on, like, eye contact and, like, the moving of your hands and that type of thing. Because
yeah, that's a whole... How
it's a body, like... Yeah, it's
how the, and do you get powers from eating Smurfs? Because, you know, Gargamel really wanted to eat
He didn't
Smurfs
want to eat
the
them.
Time.
He wanted to turn them into gold.
No, I thought he always wanted to eat them. He wanted to put them in a stew pot and eat them.
I thought the cat wanted to eat them. I thought
the cat wanted to eat them, too.
I thought Gargamel wanted to turn them into
gold. I don't know. We should capture some Smurfs and see.
Yeah. Well,
or if anybody out there has Smurfs.
We could start on some Smurf traps.
That wouldn't
be too hard to make.
Smurfs are not the most intelligent creatures.
No. Without Papa Smurf? Yeah.
No.
What's with that only one female per tribe?
That's just weird and wrong. Yeah, all hills have eyes, weirdness thing, yeah.
Did you hear they're making a sequel to that?
Yeah, it comes out in like a month and a half.
To the Smurfs?
No, The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah, it comes out in like 2 months.
I see two major glaring issues with that. One,
the first movie was terrible.
And two, it's the army, and the army's getting slaughtered by hill mutants? No.
Is that the one where they test nuclear weapons and the hillbillies turn into mutants?
Yes.
Yes.
What does that have to do with Smurfs?
It's also, from what I understand, over-glorified snuff film. It's really, really it's gory and just
messy.
Bad.
We rented the first one from Netflix, and I watched it because the original one was not a snuff film.
Right. It was a classic horror film, but
very good. The remake is terrible. Anybody out there who's even considering watching the movie, unless you love watching movies like Faces of Death, don't watch it. You'll come away incredibly grossed out. I mean, it's nasty. They have a scene where a lady kills herself by shooting herself in the head, and you know, we know she's dead, right? We know she died. You know, she died. So what do they have to do? They have to show a wall and throw chunks of brain and blood all over it. That's
yummy.
Completely unnecessary.
Stupid.
But I digress. Back to world creation.
Yes, we're talking about creating worlds. And all three of us have had lots of experience doing this.
Infinite ultimate power is within our hands.
You mean like phenomenal cosmic power?
No, that's a genie.
EDB living space. Yeah.
Well, that really much sounds like my apartment.
I'm sorry.
That's true.
We have a whole world to live in.
Well, we do have that too, but my apartment even in those...
Infinite ultimate power within our hands!
Actually, it takes both hands.
I got big hands.
That's true.
Much bigger than yours. Do I have more infinite ultimate power?
No.
What if you wear a catcher's mitt?
That would work.
Then you're playing baseball.
Well, if you're catching...
infinite ultimate power. It means you'd never lose.
You'd just flick energy to people. It doesn't work, does it?
No.
No, because we have an infinite ultimate power.
Because if people flick energy at you, you just flick bricks back at them, right?
you flick your pretend energy at me. I'm going to go get my gun.
I'll be back. I'm going to go get my compound bow.
We'll be back after this with our wonderful discussion about world building or the start of such.
Infinite ultimate power.
Have you ever been chased by the entire JV football team simply because you chose to wear your cloak to school that day?
In a broken world where magic has been outlawed, one family rules it all.
He did this! He killed my baby!
One woman cursed with magic.
What have I done?
Becomes the pawn in a game of thrones that will tear the world apart.
Who is the woman you're so urgent to find?
Her mother.
You will kill her.
Of course not.
Do you think he knows?
When we find the woman, she will destroy him for us.
When her daughter is stolen, she wants only one thing, to get her back. But that all changes when she finds her.
What have they done to you?
Join me. Together we can stop the Overlord. The children will go free.
Never.
Daughter of the Sun, the epic fantasy novel by Lana Eizel. Find out more about the novel, the author, and the podcast at LonnieEizel.com.
Oh, come on now. You wouldn't say no to a lady.
I don't know why not. They always say no to me.
Well, we're back. Hope you enjoyed those wonderful messages and quips and quibbles, etc., etc. But we're talking about our worlds this episode. So it's a bit of a departure from the regular discussion, but I think we're going to sort of open the floor up and each talk about the world we've created, just so you guys can get a baseline as to where we're coming from, and plus maybe we'll springboard some ideas for you guys as well. But who wants to start?
I'll start. Why not?
Go for it.
Well, my world actually does not have a specific name yet. The planet itself. Like, Jeremy has a specific name for his world, and I know you have a specific name for your setting. I actually do not have a specific name for my world yet. I have specific names for the continents, but not the world. The way my world is laid out is there are 8 distinct ages, and Currently, we're playing in the Age of Metal, I think is what it is. Pretty much magic is not liked. Science rules and monsters are very weak and pretty much non-existent in most people's respects because they don't believe they exist. They never see them.
Right. And on your world, you have metal is very rare here and there. Like
gold is very rare.
Gold is rare, but I'm talking like also like there not a lot of people know how to do make steel. Isn't that right?
Yeah. There's only a couple races that know how to make steel. Actually, the orcs and the dwarves are the only two that really know how to make steel. And mithril, which you know is like thrown out there, and tons by the tons in like D&D games and stuff, just pretty much non-existent and is very magical and property in my mm-hmm. world.
And very, very, very rare.
Yeah. Very, very, very rare. Let's just put it this way: the people who've been playing in my world for 2.5 years, for the first time, got mithril weapons to take on a dragon in the end of the second book of the three books for my campaign series. So they just finally got mithril weapons at the end of 2 years of playing. They're like level 14, and they just finally got actual somewhat decent magic weapons. So the metals and the magic in my world is very rare in this setting, the Age of Metal. If they're playing in the Age of Magic, which would be three ages previous to this one in the history of the world, it would be a lot easier to find things like mithril and steel, items like that. But magic would be much more intense, and they'd have a lot more difficulty fighting with monsters because magic is much more commonplace. After falling, the Age of Magic is the Age of Heroes, which is where my last campaign in my world took place. Most of my campaigns take place on a single continent due to the fact that no one ever actually has tried to travel anywhere else, and that continent's name is Tyrus. It is the seat of an empire, but it's ruled by humans called the Tyrian Empire. Started by the Emperor Balthazar Tyrus, which actually created the seat, and his descendants created the seat all the way back in the Age of Myth, which was in the line is the second oldest age in the world, only preceded by the Age of Gods, which you know, no one really remembers what truly happened there. And pretty much the kingdom has risen and fallen on a regular basis. And the Age of Heroes, the Tyrian Empire, was completely decimated and destroyed. And the city of Tyrus, which was the empire seat, was completely abandoned and was in ruin. And it was reestablished in the age that you guys are playing in. There's lots of small little cities. There's only one primary mountain chain on this continent, and there's a couple areas of note, including the Northern Forest, which is the seat of the High Elven Council, as your character well knows mm-hmm. from his tribunal there.
Yeah, that was fun.
The world is this one continent is fairly large. Another area of note is the Snakes River, which actually travels from the northern mountain range where the dwarves live, just to the, it's actually north and east. It flows south and west and branches off in about 15 different places, but travels the whole length to the southern end of the continent. Right next to, actually it empties out into the basin of the ocean of serpents. Right next to a place of note called the Plateau of the Damned, which was created by a mage whose magic went horribly awry and pulled the land up into a large plateau where magic is manifested in the most horrible forms of creatures imaginable. And usually anybody who goes there never comes back, which is why the players have to go there in the next book.
Great. Look forward to that one.
Yeah. There are 7 continents on my planet. They're all mapped out. There's only been 2 that the players have gone to, three that the players have gone to. Mashra Aina, which is essentially an ancient island, basically likened to Atlantis. It was shattered in half, which is what Mashra Aina means in the language, is shattered continent. It was almost shattered in half by a falling meteor. And after the meteor hit, some of the strange radiations from the meteor actually caused the dead to come back to life and walk. causing the entire island to be abandoned. It used to be the Empire seat for the Elves, but they abandoned it to escape. Continent is pretty much abandoned except for like two or three different little settlements. It's scrape and try to survive off of the remnants of the once great culture of the Elves. To the north, you have the continent of Ashiram, which you guys is the only other continent you guys have been to, where the nice, wonderful barbarians live, the Ashri, the Albri, and the Trondheis. It's a fairly large continent, mostly ice-locked due to its far position to the north. To the south of Tyrus is actually Tejo de So, which is actually Portuguese that a friend of mine gave me, which means Southlands, which was just the generic name I had for it. It is a very swampy, jungle-oriented country filled with warlike tribes of orcs and trolls and lizardmen. Massive jungles, and actually is the home of an indigenous race of playable species called Cabra, which are goatmen. To the far east is the land of Shaotsu Tsai, which is actually where, surprisingly, most players don't know this, so you're going to be the first person to actually know this. Shaotsu Tsai is actually where the Rakasta originally came from. And they were actually pulled over by the mage who made the tower on the point, you know, that you guys went to.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they were brought over by her. To the south of Shaotsu Tsai is a place called the Outland, which is funny because there's the Outlands in Warhammer or World of Warcraft, and I was talking about the Outland like 3 years before the first Warhammer computer game came out.
Everybody stole my goblin idea. So.
Yeah. Well, goblins in my world are still brutes and monsters.
No, everybody else told me goblin.
Yeah. But, yeah, we'll let Jeremy talk about his goblins here in a minute. There's one other continent which actually is not named yet. I'm not sure if I will actually name it anytime soon. And I know everybody's going, but Nathan, that's only six continents. You have one more. It's not named. Pretty much basically the way to put it is put it in the likening of like how North America is and its climate and like... So, that gives you a rough idea of the layout of the continent. Vast plains, couple mountain ranges, pretty much predominantly uninhabited by humans, or any shape or form. So that's pretty much the layout of my world. Give you a rough idea. In the current setting, magic is fairly uncommon, but that changes from age to age. There's former ages past the age that they're in currently, before the world actually basically is destroyed. So, I got four more ages to play in with this world before, you know, I have to start over in the beginning ages again. And that's all I can say about my world for the moment, because I can't think of anything else.
I have a question.
Yeah?
Okay, so you said that the ages will end and the world will be destroyed, but is it a cycle? Is it a destruction, rebirth, destruction cycle? Or are you just going to start the game itself?
I'll start at the beginning. Different ages.
Again. So once the world ends, it's done.
Yeah, there's 12 ages.
Okay. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
I just wanted to throw that out.
I guess I should have emphasized on that. There are only 12 ages in my world. At the end of the 12th age, the world is destroyed completely. However, that being said, I have 12 different ages to run games in, spanning a distance of about 50,000 years. So... got a long time to run games in, including contemporary or modern games in the last couple of ages, which would be kind of neat to think about, taking it to the modern day. But I digress. We're going to go to the next person who wants to talk about their world setting.
Nathan's world is predominantly, thus far, a fantasy setting. It's just the portions I've played in, but it sounds like, you know, you're heading in the direction of eventually running some modern day stuff and some future stuff in it, which is very interesting. The world I'm going to talk to you about is actually a superhero setting I just call superpowered, and it's a setting I've developed for almost 15 years on and off, and really took off a couple years ago when I was sitting waiting for my soon-to-be ex-girlfriend to get off work, and a name popped in my head, and it was one of those instances where I just wrote it down and then spewed forth about 20 or 30 handwritten pages of notes on a setting. And that name was Sentry City. It's Sentry City, like a military sentry. Now, Sentry City, I determined, was New York City. And I got to thinking about, well, what would the world be like if you have the regular history and See, like right now, suddenly heroes started showing up, superheroes. Now, this was before I had read anything like Rising Stars or Watchmen or the TV show Heroes came out, anything. This was years before any of this, so they all stole my idea. But Century City was New York. I then went on to Springboard saying, hey, what if superheroes started showing up in everyday life? And I sort of sat down and I tried to think logically about it. And so basically ended up creating this whole mythology in my head of where the superheroes, how superheroes came about and what can be basically explained away as when these superpowers start showing up. So basically the setting is Earth as we know it up to about 2012. Now, or...
2012 was the last setting we're in, wasn't it?
Yes.
Anyway, it was just after Drain the Rock Johnson stopped being president.
2012. I sat down and I went and checked actually the solar cycles of the sun and determined that, because the sun works in 22-year cycles, every 11 years it reaches one cycle and starts the downgrade to the next one, and the whole cycle takes 22 years. I came to the idea of what if when the sun reaches its about halfway point in life, it emits this strange radiation that immediately, you know, it takes, you know, 15, 20 minutes for the radiation to dissipate, basically, but it still moves at the speed of light. So I determined that, hey, okay, well, in 2012, sun reaches its half-life and emits this strange radiation that dissipates somewhere past Mars, basically. And this radiation affects people in different ways. It can, you know, affect children in utero. It can do absolutely nothing to people, or it could trigger, be catalyst for other things. And it was basically the Energy X, or the radioactive spider bite that I determined is the start of the whole superhero thing. And superheroes start showing up about that point, where it's a regular everyday setting up until about 2012, when, you know, these people start showing up that can do these amazing things. Now, the people, when they first show up, I determined that, well, there would at first be some sort of, apprehension about what are these people, is this a new step in the evolutionary process, etc. But when more and more start showing up, and doing these good deeds and averting disasters like, you know, something like 9/11, anything like that is averted, I determined that the public would quickly fall in love with these superheroes as idolize them, and they basically start this sort of cult of personality around them. And enough would happen because these people are so important and so amazing. I determined that cities would start changing their names, like New York City would change its name to Century City, Kansas City became Midland City. I love the Freedom City setting from Mutants and Masterminds so much that I actually have integrated that into Seattle, flipped it around. I integrated basically the superhero timeline that I had been working on ever since I started role-playing in the Marvel game, where there's an alternate timeline in the future where these soldiers known as Timers, T-I-E-M-E-R-S, if I remember correctly, have taken over and basically created sort of a Terminator-esque world where humans are hunted and there's slavery. And I was inspired by that from, obviously, the Terminator films and also the Age of Apocalypse comics. And they travel back in time and try to do nasty things. Now, I haven't done much with them for a very long time, but I used them in the Champions game when I ran it. That's one aspect of the future. There is an alternate timeline of basically set during World War II, so I could get my golden age off, where the United States never entered World War II. I created a bit of a timeline beyond that where the United States became a very isolationist country and ignored the World War II. And I had the players basically gets shifted over to that timeline in the middle of an invasion of Canada. So
by Nazis.
By Nazis, yes. That was a fun one. But there's nothing wrong with killing Nazis. We all love killing Nazis.
Yeah, it's great to do that, actually. It's all fun.
It's tons of fun. So I'm trying to add in all these elements from comic books where you have, you know, the alternate future, the alternate present, and even the alternate past, because that's a big section of comic book lore. Now, in the years going on from 2012, I did determine that Dwayne The Rock Johnson did run for president with Arnold Schwarzenegger as his running mate. And became president, and was president for two terms. The Rock, not Arnold, of course. Arnold can't be president because he's not a citizen. But if you look in the Constitution, it says nothing in there about the vice president not being a citizen. But anyway, the fun thing about the setting is where I put a lot of effort into it was. I developed this timeline, actually, to try to create these different ages where you had when the heroes first show up is the Silver Age style, where they're very loved, they're very respected, they have, you know, comic books and all this crazy stuff going on around them. But by the time the next radiation wave hits, which is every 22 years at every repeat cycle, another radiation wave hits, which continues on the superhero legacy. 22 years after that, in, you know, 2034, people have started to get used to this superhero thing, and superheroes aren't so brand new anymore. They have technology has advanced considerably because of, you know, supreme intellects of showing up. Basically, to the point where superheroes start getting sued for various things, biopic movies are made based on their mythic exploits, which tell absolutely nothing about the superhero's real identity because they're secret identities. It's a two-way street. You know, some superheroes are sued, but the case falls through because they can't prove who the person is. Things like that.
That's pretty funny, though, actually.
Yes. Well, it's a good defense.
Yeah.
Superhero registration, that sort of thing. And, of course, escalating violence amongst superheroes creates a new modern age sort of a comic book setting where the luster has gone away. People are saying, so what? Someone can fly and throw a bus. Yeah, we've seen that before. I use that as a...
Especially stop throwing my bus.
I use that as a springboard to do a modern age campaign for a while, and then I sort of have gone back now and again in the middle of the time period, several years after, 2012, 2016, et cetera, things like that, and run campaigns in there. And I try to integrate into this campaign world, like worldwide terrorist networks and sort of what would happen if, a terrorist group managed to get a super-powered person, basically, on their side, and what kind of ramifications would be with that. That's where I came from when I was building that setting. And that's basically where it came about. So it's about it, really. All I can talk about.
The aliens.
Oh yes, the interstellar aspect of it was with Nathan's help. Nathan made a character, and I developed. There was an interstellar quarantine on Earth because Earth was still a backwater planet. And the Interstellar Alliance basically said, don't go to these worlds because they're not ready for contact with alien species. And, of course, this sort of changes a bit when people start flying out in outer space and, moving planets with their mind.
They were actually going to destroy the planet, if I remember correctly, and we talked them out of it.
Yes. Well, there's also, I developed into it a Procyon, which was a herald to an interstellar being that was going to destroy the planet, sort of Silver Surfer Galactus bit. I really just called on a lot of aspects of different comic books just to throw in there. One more thing is I determined that magic had always existed, and But once superheroes started showing up, and you know, people were more accepting that, oh, hey, that person's flying around, many more people were more accepting of the idea that, hey, this person actually does magic, or this person throws fireballs and summons demons. People were a bit more accepting of that when they realized, oh, hey, the world isn't as, you know, as we've known it for the last, you know,
two millennia.
And so that opened the door for ancient magics to come in, and you know, sorcerer supremes to show up.
That's one thing I was going to say. I liked how you could actually have a mythic age individual,
like Hercules or Thor or anybody like that.
Or anybody like that appear, and it's not going to mess up the game because the mechanics are the same. It's just how and when they got
it. It always goes back to an episode of Gargoyles I saw, where Puck actually says, you know, energy is energy, whether it comes from science or sorcery, and that always sort of stuck with me. But it was definitely one of the inspirations for the setting.
Though that would make, just to throw this out, that'd make a very interesting conflict between the old school and the new school.
Oh, yeah.
Between the magic and the divine against the superpowered.
Like, that reminds me of, like, the Arcanum of Steamworks and Magic Obscura.
Because it would be kind of funny to have, like, a Thor-like character show up wanting to defeat the supermen or superwomen type characters because they are not pure.
Right.
Which doesn't make any sense because it's the sun, so it's still all the same, basically. But
I like to have it sort of grounded in a science. Yeah. But yeah, that doesn't stop it from saying, hey, you know, who's to say, you know, Hercules, Thor, all these people never existed. I'm sure they did. Why not, you know? Valhalla, sure, that exists. Why not? It's a comic book. Go with it. That's the setting I've developed basically over 15 years, more or less. So.
It's called suspension of disbelief. If you can do that, any setting will work.
And what's nice
like the Kansas City setting for Call of Cthulhu that I run.
Yeah.
We've got all the maps. We've got an accurate layout of how Kansas City was in 1931. And the only thing
it's a map from 1919. Because we started playing in 1919, basically.
Well, we're in 1925 now.
Yeah.
Right in the middle of Prohibition. Prohibition's almost over. It ends in 1926. 1926 is when Prohibition ended.
Well, I like in the superhero world of yours, you can basically have any, as long as it's within the certain, you know, whatever age that you're playing in, you can throw in any type of character. It's really fun.
Right. Well, and I like a bit more of a collaborative effort when it comes to creating a world, especially with the superhero world. As you guys, my players, did a lot of work in making characters and creating the alien race and stuff like that. I'm like, well, that's a good idea. Let's expand on that.
The characters actually added to the history. And that's another thing that I didn't talk about in my world, but if you go through the different ages, you'll see names of different characters who are actually player characters in previous games that ascended to a level that they became myth or legend, or actually became you know, points that are stuff that, you know, stories were written about. You know, saviors of the world and stuff like that. Actually, even to the point where a couple of characters actually ascended to godhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I also do have a fantasy setting, but I figure I wanted to get away from the fantasy thing because both Nathan and Jeremy are actually going to talk about a fantasy setting. But maybe some other time I'll throw together something on my fantasy world. But we're going to go into Jeremy's Thera setting.
Bring out your dead!
Calling Monster Island. Calling Monster Island. Come in, meet you.
This is the Monster Island Gaming Helpline. What can I do for you?
Dude, my game sucks. My campaigns don't go anywhere. My set pieces are lame. My character is forgettable. And my players are in open rebellion. It's like Godzilla just stomped all over my gaming table. Nothing but ruins.
Well, I have just the cure for that. The Godzilla Gaming Podcast.
Whoa, the what?
The Godzilla Gaming Podcast. Each month, these two blokes in Tokyo, Mike and Cam, talk about games and gaming, analyzing what works at the game table, and what doesn't, and why.
Oh yeah, I heard about them. They have all sorts of interesting discussions about GMing techniques.
That's right. They also do in-depth reviews of role-playing games, both old and new.
Aw, cool, dude. Do they do anime reviews?
Hell no.
Alright, I'll check it out. What do we do about the mess?
Leave that to the Self-Defense Force.
The Godzilla Gaming Podcast. 100 meters tall, 60,000 tons, all gaming, all the time.
仕事探せば?
Great, my closet is the door to hell.
The necropolis. A porthole to the necropolis. It had to be on the south side of the apartment.
Okay, well, we're back with the three-parter in this glorious world-building monstrosity that we've created. And today on the three-parter, Jeremy is going to give us a nice review. Nathan's going to give us a rant or a rave.
I'm going to give you a rant.
He's going to rant on something.
Yeah, high-definition media.
Woohoo. And I'm going to get some character, because God knows I need it. So let's go ahead and start off with the review with Jeremy.
The review.
Well, I was down at my local gaming store, Tabletop Games, to actually find a... They had the deck of many things. They gave me a call.
Did you hear it sold out?
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Did you get a copy?
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Green Ronin sold
Which,
out.
Which, I'm not reviewing the deck of many things yet. But maybe next time. Anyway, I was there to find the deck of many things. I had it on order. I was able to buy it. But while I was there, I was looking through their used section. Now, my one thing about Tabletop, I love the store. The used section is sometimes kind of lame. But I noticed in their used section, for half price,
they had
Beyond Countless Doors.
Doorways.
Doorways, excuse me. Beyond Countless Doorways.
That's supposed to be a really good book.
It's a Planet of Source book by Monty Cook.
From Mount Havoc Press.
Colin McComb and Ray Velez.
Yeah. Recognize some of those names from Planescape.
Yeah. It's Sword and Sorcery. Now the thing was, as soon as I got this is what my fiance
actually on a side note, McComb is the guy who wrote Thunder Rift.
Cool, which is another great one. I love Thunder Rift. But anyway, as I was saying, my fiance was with me at the time, and she said I picked up the book and pranced across the store to their news section and compared their Beyond Countless Doorways that they had in the news section with this used one to see what's wrong with it. I don't really see anything wrong with it, but, you know, $16 is better than...
$40.
So anyway, I've actually read this whole book now. I really like Planescape. Now, this, though, is much different. This does not go along... Planescape is mostly based on ethics and belief in the sense of alignment beliefs. Whether you like or dislike alignments, Planescape itself, I think, allowed enough freedom, but it was built on a certain
alignment. A tiered structure.
Yes. Now, this book, though, is not. This book talks about countless worlds. Now, countless worlds, now that could mean anything from an actual world. They even break it down. It's really nice. They have a plane, which is a level of reality, a world, a location not unlike the PC's home world, a dimension, technically the same as a plane, although normally used only when describing a particular odd plane, or realms, which is a little bit different than a plane. They're usually strange alien places. With countless worlds, it does talk about different dimensions, planes, worlds, and things like that, but there is no true planar alignments in most of these. It's not based on planar alignments. There may be worlds or planes you go to that have a strong ethical value, but it's not, the countless worlds is more spread out than that. You could have multiple hells, you could have multiple heavens. Some of the places that they talk about, let's just look at it, just one of them here. The Nexus. The Nexus is a place that was created, actually is a meeting ground between two gods to do battle, but it turned into a planar meeting place as well as traveling device. It exists outside of realities, but you can use it to travel to different places. Also, they don't have the astral plane. They use what's called the ethereal sea. And you can go into the Ethereal Sea and go into different areas. They have the Celestial River that flows into all realms, and they have the Underland. And the Underland is this underground place that goes to various realms. Some of the realms that we have in here, let's see. Avidrel, the Sundered Star. It's very cool. It's a place where the people actually created this ritual that used the sun's energy to power various things. But unfortunately, they, as the years went on, they forgot to renew the actual ritual. And, well, their sun died.
Oops.
And it
then
broke up into various shapes and sizes. The people go to this area to mine the pieces of what's left. And
cool.
It's very interesting, and it just exists out somewhere. And they talk about, in this book, it gives some adventure tips and little tidbits you could use. Let's try another one here. Kurnarost, Realm of Dead Angels. Even the angels die, but where is their heaven? Where is their hell? Well, this realm is just one of the multiple realms. Two angels, one that was an angel who betrayed another angel of his. When they both died, they realized they had no place to go. So they created the Realm of Dead Angels. And that's where dead angels go to. Another realm on here is an elemental realm called the Crystal Roads of Delair. It is basically a gigantic, in a bunch of empty space, you have these giant planetoids. And each planetoid is based on a mineral. Like one of them is emerald, one of them is iron, one of them is mithril. And on each of those, there lives what are called the Zorn. They feast upon, magical or items and such.
Cool.
And there's also angels there. There's actually this angel that exists there called Targon, the Angelic Merchant. He's a lawful good angel, but he's just not quite as pure as the rest of them. He's all about selling stuff, and it's pretty funny. His picture, he's an overweight angel that's somewhat balding with a cigar.
I'm sorry.
That's pretty funny.
He's also coated in a thin layer of grime from being around the minerals. And on this place, people come in here and raid this place for mining, because mining is illegal. They have... One thing I've noticed, there's two things in here about pirates. I guess maybe they have something with pirates, I don't know. But they have a realm...
That's because everything's better with pirates.
But there's no ninjas.
You don't need ninjas if you have pirates.
Oh no, ninjas and pirates. Either way, I think this book is...
Well, the ninjas aren't there because you can't see the ninjas.
That's right.
The ninjas strike from darkness.
Beyond Countless Doorways. While I still like Planescape a little bit better, I like the ideas in this book, and I will be using some of these ideas as a jumping point into other realms, since I am rebuilding my planar cartography right now.
Thanks, Monty Cook.
I was doing that before I found the book.
That's just smurfing awesome.
But anyway, this book is very cool, and the pictures are very neat. It's all black and white, but it's a sword and sorcery book.
Mal Havoc Press is published by Sword and Sorcerers.
Also,
black and white is fine as long as we don't have to pay $40 for the bleeding book.
There isn't a lot of typos. I know I've said that before, not with them. But I know with Green Ronin, I've said I've noticed a lot of typos.
Oh, yeah.
And
also sentence structure.
But there isn't a lot of typos in here. And I would like to, if you're listening, if anybody's listening out here, I would like to see more books like this. The planner books that aren't necessarily Planescape. Planescape-esque, but not Planescape itself.
And if you're listening out there, we wouldn't actually really terribly mind if you guys actually redid the Planescape setting for 3.5.
That would be fine.
Go to planewalker.net.
Huh? I know. Planewalker.net does have it.
It's all on there. It's like the fan updated. It's up to like 600 some pages.
But I would like to see
an official source, too.
It'd be nice. I'd like to see Dark Sun come back, but
I'd also like to see some.
One thing on the back of the book, it does say this is a Planescape reunion book.
Yeah. Because all the people worked on it and worked on Planescape.
But either way, guys, I'd like to see more of these books like this. Also, there's free bonus. I haven't checked it out yet, but there's free bonus material on MontyCook.com.
Sweet. Yep. It's web enhancements. But yeah, so, they're always good about updating their stuff, actually.
And this one is actually for 3.5.
Yeah.
That is smurfing awesome.
So I recommend it. Check out Mount Havoc Press. Check this book out. If you can pick it up for half off, goodbye.
Yeah. Bonus.
The Rant.
I'm going to rant about high-definition media. For those of you out there who are geeks like me, or a geek like me who's got a large, sizable technical aspect of their education, probably knows pretty much all there is to know about Blu-ray and HD DVDs right now. As we all know, there is a vast format war going on between Sony's proprietary format of Blu-ray DVD, or BD DVDs, as some people call them, Blu-ray disc DVDs, and HD DVD. I don't remember who actually started the HD DVD consortium. I think it was like Panasonic or something like that. But we know Sony's was proprietary and is based off of a specific format created by Sony, who wants to, as always, control the entire market and rule the world. As most people also know, there is not too terrible much of a difference between the two products, actually. Those of you who have actually seen side by side, the original disparity between the two was that, as Sony said, was that Blu-ray did 1080 progressive and HD DVDs only did 720. Well, technically that was true, but the reason for that being was that when HD DVD drives came out, 1080 progressive wasn't around. Now it's more common. If you look, HD DVD drives also support 1080 progressive, and so do the movies. But this is not what I'm actually wanting to rant about. What I'm wanting to rant about is the fact that between the two formats, they both suck. They're expensive. They're filled full of digital rights management, which don't allow you to watch the movies properly unless you spend several hundred dollars, if not thousands of dollars, on a new TV. The actual capabilities of the machines are castrated, slow, and completely unusable for the average user. There's no menu system. You don't know if you've never used the system before. You have no idea how to navigate around the actual discs to get to the special features. There's no difference in the picture quality between the two. If one's doing 720 progressive and the other one's doing 1080 progressive, there should be a sizable difference in the quality of the picture. Why isn't there? Oh, but that's right. Sony didn't want to use the VC1 compression, so they decided to stick with antiquated MPEG-2, which is what your DVDs are. All they did was increase the bitrate, which is why Blu-ray disc players are so hot, is because they have to have a massive processor in there to process that stupid information. That being said, the first HD DVD players at $1,000 a pop, which who wants to spend that much money on a frickin' movie player in the first place, used Pentium 4s and took 2 minutes to boot! 2 minutes! My computer takes 15 seconds! How long does it take to load a stupid movie? Come on! But, all in all, with prices dropping, the fact of the matter is I don't want either one of these formats to actually win. Why? Because they're both so restricted in what you can do with the movies that it's a waste of $30. $30 a movie. Yeah. Oh, wait. Well, Blu-rays are anywhere from 25 to 35, I guess I should state. They are more expensive. But the fact is if I'm buying my movies and I have an upscaling DVD player, and I can tell you this right now, the movies don't look any different. They don't look any clearer. On Blu-ray and HD DVD, yeah, there's a considerable difference. But the problem is the media is so expensive. Why bother paying for it when you can buy the same movie on DVD for $12 less? And the average user is not going to see anything. The average person is going to go, okay, what's the big deal? Isn't it so much clearer? I don't see any difference. They're not going to see. Who cares? And this is the reason why I think most people have adopted the fact that they're just sitting on the fence waiting to see which side wins. My opinion, neither side should win. You know what should win? Downloadable media. I think HD DVD and Blue Disc drives should be the last solid-state media for any system. For any sort of a video system from this point on out. And that's my rant.
I don't want to have to change my DVD player. Because I don't understand half the
thing. Yeah, speaking as someone who, when DVD first came out, I dropped $450 or $420 on a DVD player that still I own and still works.
Yeah.
the first generation of blue disc drives and the first generation of HD DVD drives will have to be replaced because they're changing the format structure on it, which means that they won't play new movies.
But I can say, as a consumer and an avid movie collector, you know, the prospect of buying 700 movies again, that's not very appealing.
Yeah, I'm not a... Here's my problem. I'm not a technical guy. When I buy a movie, I need to be able to put it in my machine. And hopefully the clock will be right. Put it in the machine, hit a button, it better look clear, without me fiddling with it, so I can watch a freaking movie. Without spending, you know, $30, $40, $50, $100, $2,000 or something.
Well, the average TV that actually supports all the features that Blu-ray needs, which means HDMI 1.3, so that it actually doesn't downscale your picture to standard DVD quality, and it supports
Granted,
progressive.
I don't have a big issue with HDTV. I don't have a big problem with HDTV and that technology. It's gone way down in price.
But the thing is to get a TV that supports the features that Blu-ray needs, it has to be a cutting-edge TV. And we all know cutting-edge TVs also have cutting-edge prices.
Unfortunately, I also, my eyes, I can't see a lot of difference.
It's reaching the point, quality-wise, where the human eye can't discern the difference.
And then at that point, I'd rather just go with the normal DVD.
Right.
As long as it's clear, there's not lines, I don't care. That's just from a non-technical point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the average person isn't going to care. They're not, like I said, they're not going to see the difference.
Yeah.
I mean, I can sit there and I can look at two movies, the same movies, on a Blu-ray disc player or an HD DVD player and a DVD player, and I can go, yeah, okay, there's differences. The background, there's depth to the background. The average person's not going to see that. Why do I see it? Because I look at high-definition crap all day long. Mm-hmm. You know, I work on computers, and our standard resolution is 1280 by 1024, which is classified as a high-definition resolution because it fits the 1280 by above 720. And, you know, I work on this sort of media all the time. I do video, you know, I do video editing, and I do 3D animation stuff. I deal with this stuff all the time. You know, it's just 3D animation stuff that I do on my own. It's, you know, just amateur crap. It's not any good. But the thing is I can tell the difference. I see it every day. Someone who doesn't, they're not going to be able to tell. They're not going to care. All they're going to know is they're going to look at it and go, holy crap, this DVD player is $1,500.
The only thing that would actually make me want to go out and buy it is if they can get to holographic images.
They're working on it.
That's if I see that fish or that monster or whatever.
There is a company that's developing a holographic television. But its problem is you have to basically be sitting within a certain arc to actually see it.
Yeah.
And they're working on altering it, but apparently it showed it, the not E3, but that the computer
CES,
expo,
computer entertainment,
and it was really impressive. But the only problem was that you have to watch it straight on, or else you can't see it.
What was funny was that the only product they were promoing on at the time was pornography.
Well,
I thought that was hilarious. And so the pictures they had of it had little black spots all over the picture.
Funny. Well,
but,
I've
the technology
seen
is very,
fish.
Very interesting.
I like the fish one, which is a simple fish, but it's a real fish. It's holographic.
And it's swimming. It looks like it's swimming on the screen.
Once holograms,
it's called 3D displacement, is what it is.
It's cool stuff.
Yeah.
And hopefully, if they get that going enough, that would be really neat.
Right now, what it is you can only view it from an angle from the center of the screen of about 48 degrees.
If you move this, you can't see it. Yeah.
But my thing
is
the blue. What is it called? The blue.
Blue Planet?
No. The things.
Blu-ray disc.
Blu-ray disc and the other one.
HD DVD.
My only concern is it's going to mess up my ability to buy a DVD to pop it in my machine. That's my
all
only concern.
All you have to watch out for is the way they got around that for people, for standard consumers, is DVDs come in those standard cases, right? Blu-ray discs and HD DVD discs come in different cases.
Yeah.
And they're different colors.
And they cost about twice as much.
And you'll notice when you pick up, wow, I want this movie, and you look at it and go, $45!
Awesome.
Yeah.
Put it back.
That's the other thing. It's like, if I can buy the DVD for $10 or $15 or $20,
I'm not going to buy
$35. Why would I?
On the sofa, we have...
Now I will spend
spend
$35 on, you know, Seven Samurai 3-Disc Collector's Edition from Criterion, but that's Seven Samurai.
Yeah, and that's also Criterion.
Yeah.
Who, like, you put their Blu-ray or their HD DVD piece right next to their DVD piece, and even the technical person goes, they look so beautiful, I can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
You can't. Their quality on their compression for DVDs is impeccable.
But that's it for the rant, I believe.
Gotta hope so, because...
Yeah, we can't let that go on. We've got character. Now, I know my NPCs aren't nearly as good as, you know, Jeremy, the resident NPC guru, but I'm going to give you an NPC that my players ran into in the last D&D game I ran when they were adventuring down in the Underdark in D&D. They happened upon a drow city, and they go into the drow city. And, you know, the whole drow city is abandoned. There's this big swirling cloud of souls up in the air.
Your stupid gems.
One of the characters, Gems, ate. That was pretty funny. But that's besides the point. Characters walk into a room. Characters walk into a room with lots of spider webs dangling from it, you know, cobwebs and nasty sort of ickiness everywhere.
And dead bodies.
And dead bodies, yes, drained of all blood and life and everything.
Empty husks.
Characters walk into this room, and this big, gigantic, gargantuan size, in fact, spider is sitting in there. And all the characters kind of stop because, well, it's a ginormous spider. One character lobs a lightning bolt or a fireball or something at it.
That was so stupid.
And the giant spider takes it and goes, "Oh, how rude," and swats this guy and, you know, knocks him out of the room.
Knocked him down to like 3 hit points too. Great.
And meant, that was unpleasant. This was the introduction of Winston. Winston was a gargantuan, vampiric, monstrous spider in D&D.
He was very cool for a while.
He was a nice guy. He was also chaotic evil and just entirely messed up. He ate a majority of a drow city. He was rather large. He ended up being not really a he. He had lots of children. But his name was Winston. The characters enlisted Winston's help in a war they were fighting.
Let's stop that for a second. One character enlisted his help, unfortunately.
Okay, yes. One character enlisted his help.
The rest of the characters thought it was a bad idea or didn't care.
But while he was on the side of... While he was on the character's side, it was great. Because Winston's children would burrow up during the night through the ground, erupt into the middle of a city, and proceed to devour whoever was there and drag people screaming into the night down holes to Winston, where he would munch on them. Oh, and also, while the characters were adventuring around, they happened to mention to Winston that there was a shadow dragon and a kraken nearby.
Well,
which
one character
mentioned this. Well, needless to say, Winston then had a shadow dragon and kraken thrall.
And he still divvied up the treasure with my character.
Still gave him the treasure, yes, in payment. Another meeting. Winston went on to be housed in the cargo section of a ship to float around and telepathically direct his children during this war. Well, one of the characters were standing on deck and made the comment with his children all around, said, "We're going to have to, you know, take out Winston. You know, this isn't good." Well, you know, the little children heard this and telepathically sent the message to Winston, who then tore out the bottom of the ship and sank to the bottom of the ocean and then walked away because he's undead and doesn't breathe. So, he later, Winston, who was a jolly British gentleman, spoke with a British accent and loved tea and with lots of blood in it, and cocoon people. He wasn't pleasant, really. Winston decided to obviously switch sides, which he did. Now, he ended up getting sealed and imprisoned in the sun for this. But
for his honor of being the second creature ever to be put on a sunfire
world. On my world, yes.
Which is a fitting punishment for betraying poor Gorik.
Yes,
Poor Gorik was the one that said he was going to have to off him.
After the whole party said he was bad to have a vampire spider.
gargantuan vampire spider.
But
Winston was only acting according to his belief system, and, you know, he liked to eat intelligent creatures with lots of blood. But Winston actually turned out to be a very... people really liked him, and, you know, he may escape from his son prison at some point.
Or at least one of his children.
One of his children may have survived.
Because one of his children could, like, have the same personality.
That's true.
And decide he is Winstead.
I'm Winston the second.
Winston, whatever.
Winston 2, this time it's personal. Mm-hmm. But that's Winston, the giant vampiric monstrous spider from Dungeons and Dragons. Now, of course, you could modify him in any game system and have him be a giant vampiric monstrous spider or anything else, really, like a giant space bug or... Doesn't matter. You could do anything with that. But he's jolly old British, very prim and proper, but he just happens to eat babies.
And be evil.
And everybody else.
And everyone else that comes into his lair. Although he didn't kill the players, he was already full. He ate a drow city.
You know. And we also offered him, you know,
a shadow dragon and a kraken. Dragon. So he ate seafood and lizard that day.
Yeah.
Fed lots of his babies.
And with that, we'll be right back after a few messages from our sponsors to do actual random encounter.
Woohoo!
Yay!
Go ahead. Make my day.
Aw, welcome, welcome. Come on in, please, please. Have a seat, warm yourself by the fire, and listen to the friendly minstrel's song. What? You've come seeking the tome? Well, you are in luck. I am the keeper of the tome. And what would you do with this mighty podcast? Oh, good, good. You have the right idea. You see, the tome is a source for expanding your understanding of Dungeons and Dragons and what various books have to offer. The tome's knowledge is endless when it comes to Dungeons and Dragons. So sit, listen, and become a sage of great renown. The Tome is a Dungeons & Dragons review podcast focused on official content. You can find The Tome at http://thetome.podbean.com or search for The Tome on iTunes.
If I were creating a world, I wouldn't mess about with butterflies and daffodils. I would have started with lasers. 8 o'clock, day one. Sorry.
Random encounters. Yes. We actually have in two encounters we've randomly had.
Wow. Well, there was the owlbear.
But you got out of that deck of monsters thing. We were like level 2, dude. It squashed us black.
Better than the blue dragon.
Yeah.
What blue dragon? Oh, you mean back in the old AD&D second end game? And you guys, something comes into sight, and it's a blue dragon.
That sucks.
We're all like, we're level 5! You stink!
Hey, if a first level fighter can kill a Tyrannosaurus Rex, skin its body, and wear its armor...
Justin,
I did sit down and figure out that if a first level character killed a 20th level creature... They would get like 1.5 million XP from it. They'd like jump up to, I think, level 214.
Yeah, but they wouldn't. They would lose.
Yeah. But if they're like, fuck, I'm a god!
I guess if they got the killing blow on it. But even then, that wouldn't work.
Any GM that gives them that amount of XP is an idiot.
Yeah.
And needs to be shot.
No, not me.
That they'd give them that many XP and said, now, you were able to kill a 20th level person. That fifth level guy is looking at you.
Smurf.
Oh, Smurf!
But yes, we have some feedback from our wonderful mailbag.
We would like more feedback.
Yes, please keep it coming.
Yes,
we're enjoying
keep it. Encounters.
The first one we got is from Kevin Smith. Whoa.
Really?
Yeah. It's either Kevin Smith.
Really?
It's either Kevin Smith from you know, USQ, or Kevin Smith, who was Ares on Hercules.
Actually, the name down here says Keith C. Smith. It's who it's from. His email address just shows Kevin Smith.
I like to think that it's actually Kevin Smith.
This is still cool. But he sent us a message. I will read it to everybody. Hoi, mates! Just started listening to your show, and I'm glad to say that it's Smurf good. Between the lot of you, your experience seems to cover a wide variety of systems and genres of play, but I don't believe any of you have mentioned having played the Exalted setting. It is my personal favorite, and it ties in the whole genre epic topic you're on now. As you mentioned, there's high fantasy, low fantasy, but this game seems to be more like science fantasy. as more of the physics and laws of nature are tied to magic. If none of you have any experience with this system, I'd be glad to talk with you on the show about it. If you have, I'd like to hear your opinions on it. Thanks for making an interesting and useful podcast, Keith C. Smith.
Thanks for that, Keith.
Thank you. We appreciate feedback. Yeah.
And actually, what's pretty interesting is we'd actually just talked about in a previous recording, I'm not entirely certain if it's up yet, we talked about the Exalted setting and how sad we were that our experiences with it were woefully inefficient. And we'd like to know more about the setting. However,
I believe that went up in either the first or the second part of the fantasy. It was in the fantasy
podcast. Unfortunately, we haven't played Exalted. I've been tempted to go down to Half Off Bookstore and pick up a version.
Do they have a copy?
I have not
been able to find
one. I've seen a copy there before.
Yeah. There's a
second edition that's actually supposed to be really nice, the second edition. Yeah. I don't know a heck of a lot about Exalted. I do know it's built more on the epic fantasy portion and sort of in tune with maybe like Final Fantasy style fantasy, where you have, you know, big swords and gods running around and stuff. I don't know a whole lot about it. I remember when it came out at Gen Con, I'd like to try it out at some point, and that wouldn't be a problem.
If we can get our hands on a couple of books.
Right.
So answering your question there, Keith, actually, it wouldn't be that bad of an idea if you'd be glad to talk to us on the show about it. Because any information we can give to other people is great, even if it's not information coming directly from us. This whole house of cards is built around the people who listen and the people who know stuff. So anybody who knows stuff that we don't know, we want to share it with
anyone. Keith, if you want to call us on our voicemail line, send us an audio, or... probably the easiest way is if you can, just record an MP3 and send it to us, and we'd love to hear what you have to say about Exalted.
Oh, yeah.
You know, tell us how much you love it, tell us about it, and we'll air the whole thing.
And if we have time, we will try to play an Exalted, at least a one or two shot.
We know one person who has the book, and he might be willing to let us borrow it to try it out.
Yeah.
If he's involved. I'm sure he'll want to be involved as well. So... thank you very much, Keith, for your random encounter, and we'll be excited and glad to hear from you as soon as you have a chance to let us know more.
Exactly. Well, we have one more random encounters question from a John Aldridge, who is on our message boards as well. Actually, sent us a question. Said, when is it best to have the characters role play an encounter rather than have them just roll the dice? It's a good question, actually.
And it honestly depends on the situation, really. It
depends on the players you're running with. Also depends on time. If it's running late, you know, and everyone's getting tired, cut those corners as much as possible, in my opinion.
That'll help. It'll help move forward the game at a faster
pace. Also, what I will do is I will still have the role, but if people roleplay, and I don't tell people this, but if people roleplay it well... that either drops the difficulty or adds a bonus to their dice roll.
That works real well.
A lot of times I have people make rolls, and I'm sure Ethan has seen this. I'll roll and someone will roll, and I may roll something real high. And depending upon the people, if they're actually role-playing, because you know we get a lot of non-role-playing in my group.
I'd say it's ultimately up to you as a GM, really. If you want to skirt around something...
or if you want to fast-forward...
Or if you're comfortable role-playing something out or anything like that, make them role-play it out, and then based on what they have, give them a bonus to their check, you know? Or just don't even give them a check. Yeah. You know, they'll say, oh, hey, you know, that was convincing enough for me. But if you got a player that's not... you know, I mean, hey, we're all gamers. We all know that we're not exactly the social, you know, socialites that, that everyone is. Social
don't
paragons.
Don't penalize them for not being angry.
Right. I mean, if you're playing a character with a charisma 18 and you're like me, who definitely does not have a charisma of 18, your character might word things better. What I generally try to do is like, well, like with in your game, I have Jess, which is, he's a paladin. He was giving a stirring speech to the troops. Me, I don't give stirring speeches, so I basically gave Nathan an idea of what I was saying and said, well, this is what I'm saying. My character would say it much, much better, and here's my check, you know. That's one way to look
like
at
39.
It.
39.
This is what I'm saying, but, my character would say it in a much, much better way.
This is what I'm saying. This is what I'm trying to do. This is how I'm trying to influence it. I have this stat.
Right.
Here's my role.
Yeah, sometimes it
works. I think that works too. But if you got players that are willing to just, you know, go you know, balls to the wall with it and role play with it, go
another
with
thing
it.
That's nice to do. And this actually doesn't really deal with specifically with your question, but it's fine to do roles for skills and stuff. But as a GM, there's times when it's great to embellish upon what actually happens with their role, whether they fail or not. Like, my favorite one was the rope climbing incident where the rope was wet and people were trying to climb the rope. Some people would roll well and some people wouldn't. You tell how they inched along the rope, painfully slipping a foot every 2 feet that they move, slowly gaining ground, but not making it quite as fast as they want to. Or, you know, following the rope and slipping down the rope and running into people below them and knocking those people off the rope. That really adds, you know, a form of tense atmosphere to the game and gives those people that extra incentive to want to roll well. But we also know that dice are random. Mm-hmm. We know that screw-ups are going to happen.
You're going to roll that natural one once in a while.
For more physical roles, yes. Physical skills, yes. You need
for
roll.
Social skills?
For social skills, that's up to you.
Yeah, it's really, it's a great idea to roleplay.
Like, if you're
going to
climb a wall, you need to make that dice roll. It's kind of hard to roleplay climbing a wall.
Yeah.
Either do it or you don't.
Yeah.
But for, you know, talking yourself out of being jailed by the guard.
Take a look at how important the encounter is going to be.
Or intimidating.
If they're going to be meeting up with your one of your main villains, you know, don't just let them roll the dice. Make them actually roleplay it out. And, you know, I think the best advice I can give on it is use a mix of them. You know, it's like I said, tell the GM what you're doing and say, well, my character has these stats and here's my check, blah, blah, blah. And a good GM will take all that into consideration and either lower the difficulty or give you bonuses accordingly.
Use common sense.
Right.
That's another thing to that. Just use common sense.
Yeah. And we know as a GM there's a lot of times when there's situations you run into that you're not exactly entirely sure how to deal with it. We always do. I mean, think how many times you've set up an encounter and then your players completely go around it and suddenly you don't know where everything's going to go because it's not in the direction you thought it would go.
Yeah.
It's like the whole thing with the monkey cage where they put in five exits, put a monkey in, and the monkey found a sixth. You know,
mm-hmm.
Something like that. People are very inventive, and you're going to run into situations like that. Just use your best judgment, whatever seems like it's going to work best for you. If it doesn't play out the way you want it, you may not like the way it went, but your players may never know that it didn't go the way you wanted to. Because they automatically assumed.
They
had fun. They didn't realize that you weren't going the way you were expecting to go.
And a good player who's been playing a while too won't second guess the GM. They'll just sit back and basically, this is how I do it. I'll sit back and say, you know what? The GM knows everything, and if it falls into place, it's because the GM wanted it to, whether they did or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a GM, I know that's not true, but as a player, I like to think that way. And if you're listening out there as a player, try to think that way. It's kind of nice. It allows you just to have fun.
Just understand that the GMs are humans too,
yeah.
and everyone's going to make mistakes. The problem is you got to be able to roll with the mistakes. And if you've gotten to the point where you're GMing, you've already got to that where you learn to roll with mistakes. You just got to roll it out there with like going back to the question again. When it comes to whether you role play or roll. Some people are really good at putting themselves in situations they normally wouldn't be in and able to work their way through it. Me, I'm not that good. You know, I have to make that die roll because if it comes to the point where I'm supposed to intimidate my way past a guard, I'm not doing it in real life. It's not going to happen. I'm a coward. I'm 170 pounds wet at 6'1". I mean, I'm a skinny little white guy. I couldn't take on my big left toe in a fight and win, let alone, you know, some 9-foot-tall orc bruiser who's standing my way between the guard, you know, the king and me, and I have to speak to him. So I'm going to make that roll, and I'm going to say something like the lines of, I want to pass, otherwise I'm going to bash your face in. My guy may be like 290-pound, you know, 6-foot-tall, you know, human warrior, and he's going to be like, pass or I shall smash your face into a thousand pieces into oblivion. You know, my character could come up with something nice, but me? I'm not going to know how to deal with it.
Also, comment on dice rolls, too. This isn't role-playing versus dice rolling, but it's just dice rolling in general. There are certain circumstances where just because a character fails a dice roll, you either, one, will want them to
succeed
and or allow them a second chance. For example, I had a player who decided it was intelligent to climb down this hill, this ravine that dropped into this pit. So the individual started climbing, failed their first climb check. I allowed him another check, Failed their next one. I allowed them a next one. Critically failed that one. On the fourth one, I finally just said, okay, at that point, you've fallen. I gave them the chance because I knew if they did this and they failed, they were falling to their death. And it seemed unfair to me, even though the player was, in my humble opinion, idiotic to do this. I did not just want to have them killed off.
Arbitrarily.
Without at least offering them some ways out.
Yeah, sometimes you have to, you know, lead your players along with a carrot on a stick to get them to do things. But yeah, now, sometimes they'll still go the other way.
I would like to also mention John's NPC, too. Have we mentioned that?
I did. I mentioned that in... I traveled back in
time. Oh, that's right. You did travel back in time. I thought it was an interesting NPC.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't think Nathan's heard about it, though.
No, I haven't.
The dragon.
It's based on the prophet of
Delphi. The Oracle of Delphi.
Oracle of Delphi. It's a green dragon sitting on heat steam.
On a volcano, basically. Yeah. Volcano vent.
And is babbling the prophecies. And there's a little kobold who actually translates them when you come in to get your prophecy.
Wow,
that's cool. It is kind of cool. I like
pretty
that
neat.
Idea.
Actually, it's a good idea.
We would like to have more NPCs ideas like that.
Oh, yes.
Throw them out. We'll put them in the show.
Yeah, you can send them to us via our voicemail line or audio. Send us an audio. We still have an audio, right?
Yeah, we still have audio, but audio is being weird and is only working periodically for people.
Voicemail, the forums, feedback.
If it comes down to it, if you have a mic and can record on your computer, send me an MP3. I'm fine with that. But, you know, our voicemail line still works. It's still up. You could send us a fax if you really wanted to at that. Or email us, you know, at thousandmonkeysproductions@gmail.com, of course.
We have lots of different ways you can contact us. If you'd love any sort of feedback as we can get.
Any suggestions to make the show better. At some point, we'll try to get mics, too. And at some point in the future, we hope to maybe even have a room just for recording. So
yes, that would be nice.
We like your feedback. If you say something we don't like, we'll either tell you or you just won't hear about it.
We're just trying to be your gaming buddy.
Yeah, we are trying to be your gaming buddies.
We want to help as best we can. And what little experience we have, and I say little because there are people out there with a lot
maybe
more.
Maybe we should start a link on the forum for world building on our actual portion just to get some ideas so people can just throw them out.
Yeah, throw it out to us. Yeah, anything we can get.
You have a username, my friend.
I don't.
Yes, but that would entail like traveling through the halls of the forum and entering into waters that I do not like.
Waters that you've never tried.
Or you could just go hit the post button.
Yeah, that seems like not as dramatic.
You're weird.
But yes, to answer your question, because we've gone completely off topic, I'm sorry. The situation for whether you should role play it or dice roll it is based on the people that you have in your group and the situation that you're presenting. When it comes to physical tasks, it's great to role play it, but the thing is you can't really role play climbing a rope. So you're gonna have them roll, but you're gonna tell them what's happening when they're climbing that rope. So you're gonna embellish on the dice roll. When it comes to physical or social situations, if I can speak, just repeat the same thing over again. When it comes to social situations and social interactive skills, it might be better to roleplay it rather than a dice roll, if the people are comfortable with it. You have to understand that there are some people who aren't going to be comfortable with that. So, know your players, learn what they like and dislike, and base whether they roll it or roleplay it off of that. That's just my humble opinion. We know all about opinions, what opinions are like. So.
Also, we're still running, I'm throwing this out, we're still running around on WoW. So, you know, feel free to send us a tell.
Yes.
We're no longer part of Deadly Nightshade, though. No. We're part of the Legion.
We're part of the Legion, just to let you know. It's a great, friendly guild.
So far, no problems.
Yeah, no problems. The people are incredibly nice. They're always willing to include you in raids and stuff if you're in the level range that you need to be. And they love to talk to all the different people. We have a great, diverse range of age of players now. No more of that 12 to 20 year old range where the people are, you know, you effing noob and stuff like that. We have people that range from 70.
Nice.
There's the youngest player I know is 7 years old, and the oldest player I know is 65. And there's actually someone older than Dawnstrike.
And I'm still carrying around the Gamer's Haven charter. I don't like just running up to people and telling them, "Hey, would you join my guild? Would you join my guild?" Because I ignore those people. So if you want to sign the charter, fine. Also, if you have materials, I'll gladly enchant stuff for you. As long as I have the enchantment.
If you have the materials, I'll gladly make you any armor I can make, because I'm a blacksmith.
I have a new demon slaying enchantment. Would love to use it. I need materials, though.
Hopefully by the time this podcast airs, you will have used it.
Yeah, hopefully. What, usually 2-3 weeks before these air?
Two weeks.
It's going to be about this. This will be 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Well, so yes, when you're listening to this, we recorded this 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Weird, isn't
just
it?
Just before Valentine's Day. Again, holiday, remember, always get ill. Hate it.
Yay. Yeah.
We'd like to thank everyone for listening, and we hope to hear you guys on the forums or
talk
emails.
To you. We'll talk at you next week.
Have fun gaming.
Yeah. We're back with the random encounter section of our podcast, and we have three feedbacks which we're actually going to try to cover today. I'm going to start with Jeremy and the feedback that he's got to read to us.
Okay, this is from Ben McKenzie. And he was just saying he wanted to let us know that he digs a podcast and he's been listening to it at work while being a data entry slave. Very sorry about that.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, Ethan
all of us have.
Bought the t-shirt.
Yeah. Quick question, he says. I know you guys focus on being a GM and running a game. Excuse me. But I was listening to an episode of Have Games Will Travel.
This is an excellent show.
Yes.
And they mentioned an interesting point. There's not that much good advice on how to be a good player. What are your thoughts? In any case, great show. Love listening to it and keep up the good work. Well, first thing I'd like to say is thank you for your feedback. It's awesome. We're glad that you like the show. We're glad that you like Have Games Will Travel. But you're right. We should talk about it at some point.
How to be a good player.
It is an excellent thing, and we might tackle that after our world building, I think.
The problem I have with the whole how to be a good player is it's subjective.
Oh, yeah, it's highly subjective. I mean, we can give you our viewpoints on how to be a good player. We can give you our viewpoints as far as being good players, but that might not necessarily be the best advice, but we can definitely help hopefully springboard some ideas.
We can talk about.
Yeah, go.
Well, and as GMs, we have some things that we like in a player. We like to see.
I mean, that might be a good thing that we get some of our friends in here to talk about, too. So,
I would like to throw this out, though. It really comes down to respect and just talking to the GM and remembering it's a game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and communication.
Communication, yeah. But we'll definitely bring this up in an episode.
Yeah.
Is that like location, make a very good location, episode. Location? Hmm? Is that like location?
I don't know.
Communication.
I guess, sure.
Something that I don't get from most of my players.
Yeah. Well, Mr. McKenzie, thank you for your feedback, and we will do an episode on this.
We will definitely tackle that. That is an excellent question, and we will. I'd like to actually have a whole show on that.
Yeah.
We got an email here from Jeff. Is it Griner or Greener?
It's the guy from the tome.
Yes. I'm not entirely certain how to pronounce your name. I apologize. Advance. All I can say is you have an awesome email address at Sasquatch.
That is a pretty cool email address.
He sent an email, and he says, in response to your superhero episode, you, in fact, do not suck. Further, I have no idea what it is that you want from people in regards to your planner travel device, which is true, that you mentioned once upon a time. If you want responses to this, about how about letting us know what you want?
Nah.
Lastly, two suggestions. One, how about a thread in your forum for each episode before it comes out or is recorded with a bit of a preview of what's going to be on the episode so that we can participate a bit in the way that you can read those forums comments for random encounters. Two, maybe record a bit closer to the release date so that we can be more timely and when the random encounters don't have to be addressed from the future. Anyway, those are my thoughts. Keep up the great work. Love the show. Jeff, whose last name I cannot pronounce properly, so I don't want to butcher it anymore. Oh, well, thank you, first of all, Jeff, for sending us another random encounter. It's awesome of you. To answer your first question about the planar travel device, I'm not really entirely certain.
That's Jeremy's domain.
I threw that out really just as a joke, but then I've been thinking about it since getting this feedback. And what I believe would be interesting is just getting different ideas on either drawings or sound effects or anything that you, as a gamer would put into a planar travel device. What types of things, whether real or not, would you use to build this? Mostly it's just a joke, you know, obviously. It's just funny. Maybe you have sound effects you'd like to, you know, shoot to us. Or drawings. We always like artwork. Or just ideas or plans. Anything like that.
So what you're saying is we should probably put up a post in the forum for the planner travel device so people can post their thoughts and opinions and pictures and
I
stuff.
I thought I did. Maybe not. If not, we one of us will. That's what I'm thinking about right now. We could even throw out things. Has anybody done any planner travel in games? I mean, is that something that we do a lot of in games? And if so, how did the players do it? I'm not just talking about the plane-shifting spell. I'm talking about, did you make it an epic quest? I mean, was it part of the quest? That type of thing, too. So there's a lot of things we can cover. I'm going to think more about it, and maybe we'll, again, come from the future and add some more to this.
On the last two suggestions, there's a really simple answer for this, and the answer for those is time. Yeah, when two of the people are not, you know, working full time and going to school, and the other person working part time and going to school and getting ready prepared for his wedding, which is on April 21st, then maybe we could possibly get to forums posted with a preview of what's coming up with the next podcast. And with any luck, maybe we can actually record a little bit closer. But as of this point in time, there is no time. So until we actually create a time-traveling device that allows us to go back and forth in time, everything's going to have to, unfortunately, be from the future. It's just the way it works.
I managed to convince Jeremy not to smash the time machine since I brought him that dinosaur.
Yeah. Life unfortunately, does get in the way. And we will try to put it closer to the time, but we can't.
Yeah, and we're actually, the holidays burn through a lot of our backlog, so we will be able to actually address things a bit sooner, and I'll do my best to get topics posted up before we actually start recording for something. So
also, one thing I would like to say about the forums, I personally am horrible with forums and putting up stuff,
so
I don't check it very often, so I will try to check it more often and put things on there. Ethan's a lot better at that than I am. I'm just not a big forum fan necessarily. So I do apologize for that. But we'll see what we can do.
All right. Now, the last piece of feedback we got is from someone named Skystreak. It's a long feedback, so I'll just read the whole thing here. I recently came across your podcast on iTunes, and I've been listening to a few of the genre episodes, and I'm enjoying the podcast overall. Thank you very much, Skystreak. It's clear you all enjoy role-playing and gaming in general, and that you're enthusiastic about it, and it shows. However, I really think you guys should be doing a little bit more research before you sit down to record. In a few of the episodes I've listened to, someone has brought up games that are basically the mainstays of the genre, and no one there has been 100% sure what the name of the game was. For example, in the modern genre episode, no one could remember the name of the game Mercenaries, Spies, and Private Eyes. And the name you came up with crossed it with Ninjas and Super Spies. A little bit of research for show prep would have gone a long way. Yeah, and I would respond to that doing the research sort of defeats the purpose of... doing research like that would sort of defeat the purpose of the spontaneous sort of discussion that we have. Because I didn't know we were going to bring that up, so I wouldn't have researched it anyway.
It's something that I remembered from when I was younger.
It is a good criticism, and, you know, that's why I would I'll always recommend that you guys look in the show notes, because I'll always try to put the most up-to-date information in there. Anyway, he continues. In addition, I think that if you're going to do a review of a game, especially an MMORPG, you should make it a point to play the game recently. Most of the criticisms you have made of City of Heroes are either out of date or a criticism of massive multiplayer online role-playing games overall. Now, this is what he points out. Here are a few of the out-of-date criticisms you made and how they have been taken care of. One of you made the mention of the police helping you out. This happens now. Police and Longbow, especially basically a superhero police force, now attack bad guy groups that are out and about. This not only adds to the ambiance of the game, but it can also be helpful if you get yourself in over your head. I haven't played the game in almost a year now, so...
I haven't seen them the last time I was on.
So, I don't know, I mean,
I've never run into them, so that...
So, our review of City of Heroes basically was based on what we saw of it when we were playing it. Bank robberies. All right, last issue, they implemented safeguard missions, the hero counterpart to villain mayhem missions. In these missions, you are sent to the instance version of a city map where you and your group, or you solo, go in and have to stop a bank robbery and his or her cohorts. You either have to stop them at the bank or prevent them from making it to their getaway vehicle. There are also side missions that occur once you have stopped the robbery that add to your time limit. They are tough, but not impossible, and a lot of fun. I don't think this is what we were really talking about. What we were talking about is just running around on the basic city map. You run into things like a bank robbery in progress or purse snatching or anything. Instead of just the group standing around,
random,
you know,
encounters is what we're talking
yeah.
about.
We're not talking about instance missions. We want things going on in the background that we can affect that actually, you know, that don't really
I like the thing in that one zone where the fires were happening. And everyone would get together and go fight a fire.
Yeah, that was cool.
See, that was cool stuff, and they need to do more stuff like that. Needing to level up to level 20. I've never found this to be the case. While I am a member of a supergroup, we have a tendency to roleplay quite a bit at our meetings and don't just grind out mission after mission together. I have three characters I play regularly, a scrapper, a blaster, and a defender, all of which are at least level 25. The scrapper is now level 40. I probably only group 25% of the time with any of these characters, and that has been evenly spaced over the course of their careers, not just after level 20. Well, then you must be on a server that has a lot more role-playing, because I think we were on the Justice server?
We were on the Justice server, and there was no role-playing whatsoever.
Yeah, there were, like, very few people.
Let me break in there. Let's say that we didn't come upon anybody, in our experience, that did mm-hmm. role-playing. There may have been some, but we ran around a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
And there wasn't any role playing that we saw
that we encountered.
And I also noticed you're playing a scrapper, blaster, and a defender, not a tanker. I was playing a tanker, and they're the redheaded stepchildren. Nobody wants them.
Everybody wants stinker. Everyone wants
healers,
and they want. They also want the scrappers because the scrappers do so much mm-hmm. damage.
Now, does teaming make things easier? Of course, but for most archetypes, as I drop things. Does teaming up make things easier? Of course, but for most archetypes, you can solo to late levels of 30 plus if you pay attention to your build. I will point out that the controllers and certain defenders builds are far more likely to need a team, though. I would disagree with that, just based on my experience looking into that.
I have a friend who still plays to this day. He's got several maxed out characters and a couple of characters that aren't maxed out, and he stands by, and he's not a bad player. You know who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He stands by the fact that to get anywhere in the game past level 20, you have to have a team, because otherwise, to grind those levels and to beat those missions, you spend so much time doing it by yourself, it becomes non-entertaining. And my problem was is they were getting so bad by the time we hit level 20. I mean, just by ourselves going into a place, doing the same mission again, defuse the bombs or whatnot, and you went from, you know, having two levels to having six. From level 18 to 19, it suddenly it was more than triple the length of the missions. And without a group to help you fight your way through it, it became to the point where just finishing a mission took you 2 hours. And for a lot of us here, we just don't have the time to sit down for 2 hours to finish a mission by ourselves.
But as far as my experience is again, I'm from the point of view of a tanker, and that's what I like to play, and that's what I play. And I'm not going to change what I play just because it's easier to play a scrapper or a blaster or whatever, because I want to play a tanker. I hit level 20. I usually end up with about three or four missions that I just can't do by myself, like especially when you start running into the Tzu. You get in there, and the sorcerers, I'm running around chasing a sorcerer for like an hour and a half, and then I finally just quit, you know, because there's nothing you can do about it.
And you can't catch them.
Also with the missions, my problem with the game, it became so repetitive that I lost interest.
Right.
And does he talk about the debt?
I'll get to that here in just a second. This next thing on here is mission difficulty. Missions increase in difficulty as you increase in experience. The risk is higher and the rewards ramp up as well. XP per defeat and at the end of a mission go up as you increase in level. I don't know if you're exaggerating, but I have never been on a mission that has taken me 4 hours, even while running on the highest difficulty rating. then I don't know what missions you're running on, because I know some of the respec, like the respec missions.
Yeah.
And the task force stuff can go on for quite a while.
Long time.
And again, you're not playing a tanker. As when playing a tanker, going in there, you got to hose on, whale on some guys, and then you got to sit back and wait for their endurance to regenerate. And if you're going through it by yourself,
it takes a lot of time.
Now, here are a few of the criticisms that are part of massive multiplayer online role-playing games overall. One, debt. Every MMO has some kind of mechanic to penalize you for dying or being defeated. City of Heroes uses debt. 50% of your XP goes to pay off debt, while the other 50% goes to increase your XP bar. In addition, if you're on an inside mission, you only get half of the debt that you would if the death occurred outside while street hunting.
I've never seen that.
City of Heroes is the only game I know of that uses debt. World of Warcraft uses...
Damages
your items, but it's nowhere near as crippling as screwing up your XP.
Also in World of Warcraft, if you res at the actual healer, yes, you do get the illness, the res illness, but guess what? It only lasts 10 minutes. And
debt
that's
can take
nothing.
Days to
debt can just stack up and stack up and stack up. It really
just got
really
to
gets
the
annoying.
Point where it was irritating.
EverQuest 2 uses a debt-based system. What they do is actually they remove your EXP. But what it does is it actually makes it the EXP that you lost red, and then you regenerate it back. Yeah. But you're not penalized. Like half of your EXP doesn't go towards leveling, and half your EXP goes towards building and taking off your debt, which takes you twice as long. It just all goes to your debt, and the fact of the matter is it takes you that little less
time. I think ultimately
time.
It's the amount of debt they charge you in City of Heroes gets kind of ridiculous.
I got beat up in a mission like twice, and I seem to recall having like an 8,000 point debt at level 20.
Right.
I remember going, holy crap, because that was like that much, it was like 3/4 of my bar.
I gave up a character because of the debt.
The debt is just, it was just too much.
At least with World of Warcraft, it becomes an annoyance when you die in a mission and you go back and it resets. Mm-hmm. But then you can go back through the dungeon. But you wait 10 minutes if you respawn at the heal point.
And if you can't find something to do for 10 minutes in World of Warcraft, you're not looking hard enough.
There's too much stuff going on. I do like these criticisms, though.
They're very valid, and we do thank you for your feedback.
It could be worse. It could be like Lineage, where you die, you drop something, and someone steals it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, next point. Early opponents. One of you said that you got bored fighting thug after thug who all look the same. I believe that was Jeremy who said this.
Mm-hmm. I think I lost that.
Early-level opponents in most MMOs are notoriously boring. In my opinion, I'd rather be facing off with reanimated corpses or street gangs whose members have made a deal with a demon for their powers, then fight wolves and bears or bugs. City of Heroes allows you to be a hero right out of the gate. Even Superman still takes on street-level crime here and there in the comics. My answer to that is City of Heroes, every massive multiplayer game does this. City of Heroes does it too. Even early level on into the higher level stuff, they're still the same crooks. They're just, instead of being a level 5 skulls, he's a level 15 skulls or 35. It doesn't matter. They all look the same.
My answer to that is I would actually at lower levels rather fight the wolves and the bears so I can get to the level where I can fight the bandits and or the wizards and things
like
that.
That's one of the differences of opinion. Is that a lot of MMOs that are fantasy make you fight animals and stuff starting off, but the fact of the matter is when you're a new inexperienced fighter. Going out and trying to take out that bandit, whether he's just as inexperienced to you or not, considering him and like 80 of his buddies are going to be there, is not going
to
be doable.
And I do seem to remember, I know this is again just World of Warcraft, but if you go at the starting spot in the Alliance area, if you stay on one side, it's the wolves, it's the little kobold things, and if you go across the river, it's bandits.
It's Defiance. Yeah, starting off, you fight people.
So, it's just a differing of opinion.
It's a differing
opinion. I know for myself, I got tired of going, oh, it's another thug. Oh, it's another thug. Guess what? It's another thug.
Right.
I wanted to fight earlier levels. I wanted to fight the monsters. When I saw that giant octopus, there wasn't anything my level... that was that neat.
Yeah.
Every instant I went into was going to be the same thing.
Yeah, so look, it's like doing the whole NASCAR thing. Look, they're making a left turn.
Mm-hmm.
They're making another left turn. That's all you do. You do the same thing.
All right. His next point is role play. Internet speak is a problem in any online environment, not just massive multiplayer online games. It pisses a lot of people off, but that's the nature of the beast. It's true that there's no official RP server, but if you're looking for a more roleplay-oriented server on City of Heroes, try Virtute, or to a lesser degree, Freedom, and make sure you write up a history for your characters. I've been part of a roleplay-oriented server group for over a year, and a year and a half, that we got started up by posting a thread on RPGNet to make sure we got like-minded people together. We all have a great time with the group. We're not saying that there aren't people on City of Heroes that don't roleplay, it's just there aren't a lot of them on there that roleplay.
That we found.
And I know there are super groups that are for roleplay only, and that's great. You know, we were in the process of joining up with them when we sort of just dropped out of the game, more or less.
And that goes over to World of Warcraft's the same, where you have tons of people that don't roleplay. Am I going to roleplay always on a multiplayer game like that? No. But would I make a sum of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a person. That's just a personal preference, and now I understand the you know, we're just gonna have to deal with that. That's nothing that's gonna change. One more thing. Another point that someone made was about how tough the Rikti invasion was. It was supposed to be tough. In game, it was the second round of an invasion that essentially wiped out a significant portion of the world's hero population. Outside the game, it was an end of beta event. It was intended to allow the player to be part of something major, but was never intended to be an example of how things occur during the regular game. I was not a part of the whole Rikti invasion thing.
I was. And we were beta testing it. And the fact of the matter is I understand wanting to make it hard. The problem is when you drop like level 30 monsters in the first area for people where people are like level 5 and 10, and you've got like 20 level 5 or level 10 people trying to take on a level 30 monster and getting slaughtered in one hit, that's not fun. Yeah,
that's just a way to...
Where were these aliens, like, where were their lesser troops? In a game like that, you do have to have a power. That's why they have CR in D&D. You have to have the lower level foot soldiers
to fight the lower level players.
And you can have the hard ones come in once in a while, but you have to let it be fun.
Yeah, there was nothing fun about it. It was just an absolute slaughter. And that was my first encounter where I had a distaste for City of Heroes. And this was, you know, before I even actually had the official game in my hands. That being said, I know we make a lot of criticisms about City of Heroes, but we have just as many criticisms about any other online role-playing game that we play. There's problems with everything. I apologize if we have offended you with our opinions, but the fact of the matter is they are our opinions, and we haven't seen any changes.
He concludes up, it's been a long time since beta ended and the game was released in April of 2004. I would strongly recommend that you all give City of Heroes another try. Almost every issue that they release adds something new to the game to expand it. Issue 9 will add the invention system, their City of Heroes, City of Villains version of crafting, right? So if you're considering going back another try, I'd recommend doing so after Issue 9 goes live. Don't let my criticisms in this email let you think I do not enjoy your show. I really do. I just thought I'd point out a few ways to make it better. Keep up the good work. Skystreak.
Well, I would like.
Thank you very much for the. This is good stuff. We're not dogging on you at all. We're just trying to let you know where we're coming from.
Yeah.
And if they have improved it, fantastic. I'll install the game and renew my account at some point. Because I love superhero stuff.
I know with
every issue they do add more stuff and they do clear up a lot of stuff, and that's great. As long as it's still a work in progress, that's fantastic.
One thing about our reviewing of games, though, again, it comes down to time. We don't always have the time to play everything that we would like to review. Sometimes we have the time for just reading a book. Sometimes we only have time just to glance at some things. We aren't professionals.
Yeah, we're not professional reviewers by any means. I mean, that should be clearly obvious now.
We want to use all of the criticism, both good and bad, to increase the show and increase our show, make it better as time goes on. So I want to say I do appreciate those comments. I'm glad you enjoy the show.
Please keep listening and please keep sending us feedback about what you think we can do better. This is what we want, very much so. This was very good feedback, very informed, and we appreciate it, Skystreak. Thank you very much.
And make sure you look at the show notes, as Ethan says, because he is our researcher
and he does try to make sure that if we miss something in the show, he puts it in the show notes. So
check out that game that he was talking about, the one he said that started the modern genre, because I haven't heard anything about that in a long time. Yeah. I don't know if it's still in print.
Mercenary Spies and Private Eyes, yeah. And, you know, we'll do our best to stay on the ball with that stuff.
The Ninja Spies but like I was a Palladium game, wasn't it?
Yeah, Ninja the Super Spies is Palladium. That's the one I was thinking of. That's the one I thought you were talking about.
That was the one I was talking about.
What we're really trying to emulate with this and do with this game is we are giving tips for GMs and even tips for players to an extent. What we're trying to do is get you to springboard ideas, basically, is we're trying to be a catalyst to get you thinking about something maybe in a different way or think about it in a new light, you know, something that, that could actually improve your game or give you something else to work with. We're not perfect by any means, good Lord.
Also, something to think about the show, this is something that Ethan actually brought up earlier today, that we're trying to keep the show as if it was just a group of friends, which we are, that are just sitting around discussing gaming. So since
we want to be your surrogate gaming buddies.
Yeah. There are other podcasts out there where they're a lot more
professional.
Professional, I guess, might be the word. We can be professional and still friendly. We're still getting to that point, but we also want to keep that just, you know, kind of down to earth, friendly discussion about gaming, something that your friends would have. So, but we appreciate all the comments.
Yeah,
and we'll get working on some.
I'll talk to my friend who works for NCSoft out of Texas, and I'll see what he has to say. He was last time he was up here, I was around Christmas time. I was talking to him about the new implementations, which is how I heard about the invention system. But going back to the whole thing, my major problem with fighting the bad guys is it's all right to have them all be villains of the same gang, but everybody looks exactly the same, and it's. That was my only problem with fighting the bad guys. It was like, I just arrested you like 15 seconds ago down the street.
That's a problem I have with all massive multiplayer games in general, is the, hey, how many times have we killed Van Cleef in World of Warcraft?
Five times?
Sometimes.
There should be something in there that, you know, my brother makes this point too, and he helps design massive multiplayer games, is what we wish you could do is the nature of a massive multiplayer beast is, if you want to do something that's world-changing, that's like, hey, I defeated this big bad guy, I don't want him to respawn 15 minutes later, well, unfortunately, that's just not how massive multiplayer games work.
You can't flag it.
If you want to do that, sit down and play a tabletop game with your buddies, honestly.
The only thing they could do, I guess, is maybe somehow make it so that the character responds for some people and not others.
Yeah, it's called a player flag.
Yeah,
they've done it in other games, like when you finish a dungeon, you finish all the quests in the dungeon, your character has got a flag that's not anything you can see, but you can't ever go back in the dungeon. You finish that dungeon.
I wouldn't like that, because I like going back in the dungeon, but one thing I haven't tried yet is you can change the setting of your dungeon in World of Warcraft from normal to epic. It would be nice if that would change drastically. Like, it would be assumed that, let's say they flag your character so that if you go through the normal time, you kill Van Cleef. When you turn up the difficulty, there's something else there.
Yeah.
Not that the dungeon changes per se, but some of the monsters might change.
Yeah. Right.
That might be a headache for the programmers. It probably would be.
But, you know, we're talking, you know, just sort of messing with the nature of the beast itself. So, but, again, thanks for the feedback. It's all great. Keep it all coming.
You can visit us on the web at CanadianCrusaders.FistfulOfComics.com. You can visit our website there, leave us an audio. You can call our voicemail line at 206-984-4122. Leave a message on the Frapper map. You can drop us an email at ThousandMonkeysProductions@gmail.com. And you could also just visit the forums on Fistful of Comics. We have our own little section there.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
Expect no mercy if you head out west. 'Cause if you ain't got
Gamer's Haven is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 2.5 license and is hosted by the fine folks at www.fistfulofcomics.com and is a Thousand Monkeys production. There's just one rule, and it's go eye for an eye. And if you swallow the drone, you'll be fast to die.
So we're not really back yet, so you can just ignore that.
Yeah.
It's just Ethan, like, stabbing.
Let's see, this feedback. Hell Cannon of Chaos. No, wait.
That's not hell. No, that's what you're going to feel against us in the next Warhammer game. I'm going to have to, like, kick you in the nuts.
I think the first battle is going to explode.
Oh, good.
Zargon!
Barbar!
Barbar!
Which, yes, poor Zargon has changed into Lord of Chickens, but that's okay. He can't be president, though.
No, but he could be vice president.
Because he's not a nut.
Which is a funny, it's an interesting way to get around that rule. Because if the president were to die, he's vice president... He would have to become president.
To become the president.
But he couldn't be re-elected as president.
Message for you, sir! He's a smurf and smurf, smurf, smurf.
Shut up or I'll beat you with a stick. There. Throw some babies on the fire.
Arnold as his vice president.
Donald.